Forge Ministries is pleased to welcome Colin Gunn with a message entitled, Christian Cures to Our Healthcare Crisis.
There's a real benefit to understanding that when people come to you with political solutions, there's a reason why they're doing it often. It's their own selfish leverage of their own power. So be suspicious when someone says there's a political solution to something. It's not that we shouldn't overturn Obamacare. And what you hear from a lot of politicians is we should overturn, we need to vote Republican, you need to vote for me because we need to overturn Obamacare. Well, the problem with that is that the problem didn't begin with Obamacare, just like the problem with the sexual revolution wasn't just what happened in the 60s and onwards, and our public schools didn't just get bad from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s onwards. It was already bad. In fact, it was bad in the 1800s, philosophically. And most of the bad philosophy that undergirded what happened in the public schools happened already back in the day. And so that's what we find here. So the good news is solutions are right there in front of us. And these are the solutions that I'm going to suggest to you. The first one is medical liberty. We'll talk a little bit about what that means in a minute. Capitalism, free market, we'll talk about that. Personal responsibility, church responsibility, voluntary collectivism, and charity. And these are the solutions that I'm going to talk to. We're going to go through these. They're really just outlining what's in the film, where we go from step to step. These are the things that are going to solve our problems. So I've not mentioned political action in there. I'm not against political action, but it will not be fixed. It's sort of like, it's just a false messiah politics. And, you know, people sort of push you into the idea that you need to be voting, you need to be active. I'm not against that idea, but we really have to fix our own homes, our own households. We have to be raising children in the Lord. There's all these things that need to get done for even us to begin fixing things politically. And while we have access to these life rafts attached to the side of the sinking ship, then we should use this opportunity to find these other options, to find this alternative world that's needed. The government's messing something up, and we can't do anything about it, which is pretty much the case right now. We have to make that other system work. And that what I'm talking about is a Christian system that follows these rules. So let's talk about the first one, restoring medical liberty. First point I have here is we've got to end government intrusion into the healthcare industry. When you think about healthcare, the biggest problem, I talked in the last seminar about how my sympathies changed towards anyone who practices medicine. So anyone who's a doctor or works in the medical field, I realized there was a difficulty that I don't even need to face. Now, I'm one of those guys that doesn't like to go to the DMV. It's probably everyone in America, but I don't like to do my taxes. Probably everyone in America, too. But there's lots of things. I don't have a lot of government intrusion apart from those little things or when I get pulled over for speeding or whatever it is. That's my contact with the government. That's not true for medical professionals. In fact, they're constantly, from their licensing onwards, involved in the issue of government involvement, government observation, government recertification. So they're not even free to just practice once they've qualified. There's recertification. There's a whole host of things, to the point that they're filling out forms all the time, to the point that we really genuinely say that the healthcare system is burdened by a bureaucratic nightmare. And that changes year to year. So even if you've got it right one year for the bureaucratic process, the next year you might not. And it's massively expensive to stay compliant. And this is why, you know, when you go to the doctor's office, this is a common complaint of a lot of people, a lot of patients. And that's what this is a story that sort of a lot of people would give you as the patient's being the victim. The patient is the victim. But the reason the patient is the victim is because the doctor is the victim first. So the doctor faces this bureaucratic nightmare. So when you go to the doctor and the doctor's looking at instead of looking at you, he's looking at his computer and he's typing something in. So you're talking to him and you'll see the doctor. I don't know if you have any of that experience. I've seen it, taking kids to the doctor. And the reason they're doing that is they have to be, for them to get paid, they have to get their codes right. It's not so much that they're so attentive to your records that are online. It's the fact that they have to, if they get a code wrong, they're typing it into their computer screen, they will not get paid for it. They have to send it to get money back from the insurer or through Medicare or Medicaid. And if they get that number wrong, or that bone, which bone was it you broke? Was it which hand was it? There's not just the problem of not getting paid, but there's also the problem of being sued. And that's the other big fear of medical professionals, is they have this bureaucratic burden and this fear of being sued that makes them act in a different way that is not patient-centric. And so what we've done is we've broken down this relationship. We'll talk about that in a minute. Removing third-party pay as much as possible. Now, third-party pay in insurance isn't necessarily an immoral idea. Two people getting together where you would say, I will pay for your needs in a particular area if you agree to pay for mine in a particular area, is reasonable. It's a reasonable family covenant where you say, I need, my car's broken down, I need some money to help, and, you know, you might not state it, but the implication would be if the same happens to that other person, you would do the same for them. So that's a reasonable thing. The problem is what third-party pay has done to the healthcare system. And by third-party pay, it would be insurance. It would also be government as well. Hey, boys, can you stop talking, please? Thank you. Okay, so the third-party pay is a considerable burden upon the medical industry. So much so that it really inhibits what they do. And what we're trying to do in healthcare is restore the doctor-patient relationship. We're trying to bring back this important aspect of what healthcare really is. Healthcare really was all about that back in the day. It used to be that you would get healthcare directly, fee for service. Your doctor would be someone that you would know. The doctor might even be someone that would teach, practice medicine multi-generationally. So you would go, you have the same doctor that your grandma would have, that your mom and dad had. This was the way things used to be in healthcare. There used to be a great relationship between the doctor and the patient. As I said, with the doctor turned toward his computer, thinking of codes, worrying about being sued, so practicing medicine in a different way because they're worried they overprescribe. You fall over. You know, I don't know if you, you know, when you were younger, things would happen to you. You'd fall over, bang your head. You maybe get a concussion. Well, now, because doctors are so afraid, they're sending so many people to get MRIs, so expensive for them to do it. I know of a friend who, you know, his son plays football, so he got the concussion, which is very normal and expected. And he's airlifted from the field, taking, you know, all these things that add huge burdens of cost to the individual. Even if they have insurance, you get this big burden on the patient. This is Keith Smith. He's in Oklahoma. And what happens in his clinic is really amazing. I really want to introduce you to him. He's in our film. And so what happens in his clinic is how he's been able to get off third party and government insurance. He doesn't take any government pay. He doesn't take any third party pay. And what he's able to do is open this surgery center that does something that really solves the solution that I mentioned in yesterday's talk. And that is the problem of lack of price transparency. So we mentioned that in the talk earlier, and we played a little game. We played a game where you had to guess the price of particular operations and the treatments and all the rest of it. Well, what Keith Smith does, which is revolutionary, which many people haven't done, which is surprising because there's real opportunity here, is to put his prices online. And he's got it down. And the reason he's done this, and this is always what I like about people like Keith Smith, is he's a doctor, but he's also something else. He's not just said, well, I just practice medicine, and I'll practice medicine the way everyone else practices medicine. He's a doctor, but he's also an economist. He loves economics, and he's made a lot of effort to really, and he really enjoys economics, so he's read Mises and Rothbard and some of the guys that I've always liked. And so we got on very well because he realized, and I always see this as a real virtue for professionals, where they take the opportunity to study a field and then they reapply it back to do something completely different. And this is what he's done. It's not a totally revolutionary idea, but what it's doing is it really is people like Keith Smith are shaking up the industry because what he's doing is he's projecting the real cost of operations. And so he goes online and starts putting the cost. He's even able to change the cost. If he's driving around and he sees someone else producing medical services at a lower price, he can change it from his cell phone and change the price of things. So he's really got it down to an art. And that's unbelievable for this area or segment of our economy where all the prices have been hidden for many years because of third-party pay, because of the way we've designed our system. And what happens is people are flocking to his clinic. They're flying in. You know, this is the other merit of One of the problems with third-party pays, you're often locked into a particular area, can't go out of state. If you go the cash-only route, which we'll talk about somatic ministries in a minute, why the cash-only route changes a lot of types of choices that you have in terms of the health services you can find. Well, here's another example where the free market is able to fix a problem. Despite what the government has done, people come to his clinic to get services at a reasonable price. And what he found was the first people that started to show up were Canadians. So very interesting that people that have free health care have this so-called free healthcare system, single-payer system, would rather pay cash for a service that they want. They're usually paying because they get it sooner or they get it at a different quality. So it's quality. That's what you get in the free market. Free market brings the best quality product at the lowest price in a pure free market. That's always what you get, and that's what we don't get in healthcare. What he's able to do is attract people who don't want to wait. They don't want to wait those, 18 months for a hip replacement. They want to get it done now. And so that's what he was able to do by getting off that third-party system. This is Jules. She's not Dr. Jules Madrigal. She is not far from here. She's in Marble Falls. She runs a cash-only clinic. She does very much the same thing, not at the surgery level, but just at the local clinic level. And she's very interesting, too, because she tells very much a similar story of how things changed for her. First, she doesn't have to fill out all these forms, which just took up her time. I mean, all these clinics have people on staff, and all they're doing is not providing medical services, like treating you or, greeting you or whatever. They're just there filling out codes for this system, ICD-9, which is now ICD-10, transitioning over from one bureaucratic coding system to another. Of course, in the midst of that, there's a huge industry of people that profit from that transition and you have to pay people on staff just to fill these codes out to get it right so that you don't bill the insurance company, it's sent back and you're not getting paid for this $100 that you really want. In a week, you get it in, months later. And this is the crazy thing. So she only takes cash. You show up, pay her cash, and she'll provide some health treatment. And the other amazing part of that is that grants her a considerable amount of liberty in terms of how she can practice. Under Medicare and Medicaid, it's very difficult for doctors to give free services. In fact, in some cases, it would be illegal for them to do it because there's pricing controls. That's really what the system is designed like. And so someone like Jules is not under that burden because she's got nothing to do with the government. So what she does is she can barter. And she doesn't do it with everyone, of course, because most people can pay cash. Most people, if they need to, can come up with $100 and pay for it. In fact, she has people in her clinic that would be considered the poorer part of her segment, Hispanics that maybe are not, wealthy. And that's what she deals with, a lot of those kind of people, elderly, and people that they just don't have a ton of cash, but they can still come and pay. And she's able to do it at this reasonable cost. They could go, these same people could go and get covered by Medicaid for free, but they don't want to do that. They'd rather come to Jules and pay $100 because they know Jules loves them because she's a Christian. She practices like a Christian. She's able to do what those other, here's your number, here, wait in line, take forever to get this treatment. They don't give you even eye contact when you get it, and they know it, and so they'd rather pay for the valuable services that Jules provides. The other aspects of what Jules does is she's able to be completely charitable, and if she sees needs, and she discerns over it. So this is the problem between welfare and charity, the big difference. Biggest problem is the government doesn't discern properly. It gives welfare to all the wrong people for all the wrong reasons. It subsidizes sin, subsidizes non-work and laziness, and we have huge problems in our culture as a result. The moral hazard problem. Jules is able to discern. Because discernment only really happens, and you know this, you're able to look at a person. That's why to administer true charity has to be person to person based on the Good Samaritan. You know his circumstances and you genuinely help him. You don't leave it up to a third party. So what Jules does is she offers people who are struggling. People will clean her car for treatment. People bring eggs. And they have a farm and they have a bunch of eggs. So they bring the eggs in and she gives them treatment. And she's also able to treat people. If they get cancer, she stops charging them. Once you get cancer, she stops charging them for clinic visits. And that's, you know, that, and she's able to do that. She would not do that in a hospital. She would not be able to do that elsewhere. So back to the idea of capitalism. So this is one of the next stories that we have to mention. Now, capitalism is one of those areas that scares maybe a lot of people. Just think about it. It's free market. And this is John Mackey. I don't know if anyone knows who John Mackey is, but he's the CEO of Whole Foods. Whole Foods, pretty big company, and John Mackey's worth a pretty penny. And he's another guy like Keith Smith. This is what I thought about Keith Smith. He's one of these guys, like, why would someone who's a CEO have to stick his neck out and talk on this issue of healthcare? And it's something that makes me admire someone. You know, so many people in our culture, that do they just keep their head down and wait for their pension to kick in or whatever it is and not do the right thing? But Mackey is doing the right thing. John Mackey's doing the right thing by sticking his neck out because he knows it's important to speak out on these issues. He's got more money than we'll all ever have, and he's got a great business that does fantastic products and services. I mean, it's just a great place. Why would he want to speak on this? But he speaks out on it, I believe, because he realizes that he knows there's a solution to this healthcare problem. One of the quotes we have in the film of him is that we haven't had a free market in healthcare for 70 or 80 years, and that really is true. And he knows because he's dealing with the issue of health all the time. In fact, his motivation to start Whole Foods was that we had problems with what we ate. And he started this little place in Austin that's become sort of standard. And it's interesting that his audience, sadly, has often been those people that would be political opponents to us. And sometimes political opponents to him. But I don't think he's a Christian. He's libertarian, like I am, but he's not. I don't think, you know, we probably have big differences when it comes down to it. But what he's been able to prove, what he's spoken out on, and what he's written a book on is the merits of the free market. The merits of the free market are just the big solution to this problem. Better products, lower prices. A couple of examples in relation to healthcare is plastic surgery and LASIK surgery. And they're good examples that have dropped in price, not always consistently. Sometimes you get a price that's static, but the quality of the improvement, it goes along with it. So with LASIK, it was switching from knives to lasers and all the rest of it and changing the way they did it. Plastic surgery as well is another example where there was a free, you didn't get a lot of insurance companies paying for nose jobs and all the rest of it. In Britain, they do pay for a lot of plastic surgery because it's a psychological. So, you know, I have a big nose, it's ruining my life. You go to a psychologist, they'll send you to the doctor, and they'll fix it for free. Problem solved. The plastic surgery and LASIK surgery and other types have existed within our world of messed up economics, and the blessing is we're able to look at that little world and see how things have changed price-wise. So the prices of all of these forms of plastic surgery have gone down over the years, whereas all the other operations that we talked about yesterday, they've all just gone through the roof. I mean, I was talking to someone about they had C-sections for their kids, and it was like, you know, 5,000, 6,000, year to year, they kept track of it. They were very aware of it, their kids. And now it's gone up, and it's just like this curve. But with these other non-third-party pay and non-government-paid health treatments, it's static or it goes down. I mean, it really is interesting. It's just the economics. Bad ideas fail. Good ideas are rewarded. I talked a little bit about that yesterday. When people have a bad idea in the free market, it's quickly corrected by people not buying that bad product, that bad idea. You know, Zoom, or as opposed to the iPod or whatever it is. Those differences between good ideas and bad ideas, the free market is able to sieve through it much quicker. Why is it able to do that? Because it's based on the choices of millions of people who are immediately able to evaluate that product based on their priorities plus their price point. Healthcare doesn't have a lot of that going on. And so bad ideas, including bad treatments that might not work, if you think about some of the types of very expensive treatments like chemotherapy where it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm not necessarily knocking the validity of those sorts of treatments, but you could see that within that kind of market, there is an incentive on the provider to have massive costs, and even whether they're effective or not, okay? Because they get the reward regardless. It's not a free market. In the free market, good ideas are rewarded, and that's what we want to see in healthcare, where innovation, cures for illnesses, would be something where there would be huge financial benefit to those cures, and not creating the pharmaceutical cartel, escaping that, but really having a pure free market for those that really invested heavily in cures and treatments that would work. And it's often the hard part of it is you don't know. We don't know what our healthcare system would be like if we had a free market for the last 50 years. Would we have found the cure for cancer? Would we have progressed much faster? I would argue we would have progressed much faster in healthcare and health treatments, and that would have been a considerable advantage to us. Choice is another example where there's real merit to looking at what we would have under capitalism. When you're locked into a third party or government pay insurance, there was a story recently in the NHS of a young man, you might have read about it, on where a young man was getting treatment in a NHS hospital, and he had to, the parents wanted to take the kid to Europe, away from the NHS, away from the British hospital, to get treatment, and a different form of treatment. But the NHS didn't want that to happen. And so they effectively got this family arrested for taking their child to another part of Europe. And this was something that caused a bit of media stir. And it's a good example of where choice is eliminated under government-controlled healthcare. It's very apparent more under sort of the national health care services that we've seen. I talked a little bit about risk and innovation and how if we had capitalism, we would have a lot more people. Capitalism, the freedom to experiment within a market really does inspire people to see opportunities. I don't think there would be a bigger opportunity than curing big illnesses financially. Everyone was going to want to pay for that. I think if it's stifled, or we're paying for the wrong thing or distributing it in the wrong way through a socialist system, it's not going to help us. And so that's what we need. The other interesting thing about that capitalism in the free markets is always better for the poor. Poor always suffer the worst under socialism. You look at the inner city schools, you look at the ghettos, you look at what is considered, we're doing this for the poor, we need socialism, redistribute wealth. But of course, in the reality, even though it's played out in the best circumstances, which America may be the best circumstances because there's still a lot of capital in our socialist system, it's always still worse for the poor people. Still a lot of people who are suffering in these inner city schools and in these badly designed government systems. And the best example for the poor is to get them to be not poor, right? And so how do you stop being poor? So we often think of the poor just as a big bunch of people that are poor, and they're always poor, and poor are always with us, and that's true in a sense, but that category of the poor is not a static thing. People come into that pool and leave that pool. Most of us have probably been in that pool and then exited that pool at particular points in our lives. So when you talk about that, you talk about it from that perspective, the best thing we can do is to make that exit of poverty as easy as possible. What's the best, provide the maximum amount of opportunities for people to escape poverty. And it's only capitalism that does that. Socialism limits that and keeps people locked into that trap that so many people in America are in, of being locked into welfare. They're in that circumstance where it's not economically viable for them to leave the category of being poor. Literally by choice, they don't want to work because they'd be worse off. So it's a sensible economic position in a sense, Here we have a young woman who represents the poor in our film. And so a lot of these slides you'll see, we use a diner theme. What we try and do in our film is have a theme in the film that represents what we think will help Americans understand the economics of healthcare. And so it's through that model that we try and show people that the world of medicine, while it seems complicated, if we started to just apply basic principles to that system that we all understand, and we go buy just food and we buy services ourselves. So we started to just take simple economics, like a simple economic understanding applied to healthcare, it wouldn't be that hard of a choice. The other story here, so, you know, capitalism can only take us too far, so far. We have to look at personal responsibility, and this is something that it's part of capitalism. I mean, part of homeschooling is personal responsibility, right? Where you say government's not good enough, we're going to take responsibility, and even the responsibility of the expense of what we need to be doing. That's our responsibility, not the government's. There's a personal responsibility, though, in terms of what's happening in terms of or things in the church. So I'm talking mainly about diet, but also, you know, lifestyle choices and other things that affect your health. Now, what we found in terms of the lack of personal responsibility in our churches, in terms of things like obesity, you know, so I'm going to slide, actually, I'm going to scroll down to that. The obesity rate in the churches is very high. This is a comparison. A study came out in 2006. I don't know how much it's changed, but obesity rate in Baptist churches is 30%, Catholic 17%. The Jewish, I don't know why, I mean, this is weird sociology going on here, and I don't have any real reasons for this other than maybe our Baptist cultures are allow for it. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's an allowance thing. It's acceptable forms. You can't smoke, can't drink, can't party, you can't listen to rock music, but sugar's okay in vast quantities. That's sort of the thing. I'm not criticizing anyone, and this is a story, which is a personal story as well, which we sort of mentioned in the film, of my lack of personal responsibility, which is partly because I'm Scottish, and we have, and as I mentioned in the talk yesterday, we have massive health problems in Scotland. The Scottish tradition is to deep fry everything in batter, and it tastes amazing, you know. And it's not, you know, it's not corn oil, it's beef fat and all the rest of it. Fry these great things, fish and chips. And that was our fast food. When we were young, we'd have these, you know, great fish and chips. And I grew up in an ice cream store, a candy store. That was what my mom ran, a candy store. So I was like, I had the, you know, kid in the candy store. That was my life as a kid growing up, was all this great, these great products. And British chocolate's way better. You don't know this, but British chocolate's way better. Cadbury's and all the rest of it, better brands than Hershey's. Hershey's is horrible chocolate. So this isn't a criticism of Baptists in general, of which I am not, but I have most of my friends are, and I associate with that philosophy mainly. But we have a crisis that's apparent, and we know it. This isn't a form of criticism, but I know for a fact that the last three churches we've been in, if you wanted to find the pastor, you would find the biggest guy in the room. That was how you'd find the pastor. And it reflects something, it says something about where we are at. And it's not that you want to fat shame people or anything like that. It's that we need to deal with it. The third point down there is that it's something that we can fix. The second point is a bad witness. So you think of us witnessing to the Californian who's on their exercise bike for 2 hours a day and is all tanned and surfing and all the rest of it. They're going to have a stumbling block at some point. And it's a legitimate one in a real sense. In the same sense that if you were evangelizing, and I'm not teetotal, but if I was out evangelizing and I had a beer in my hands in the South, it would be a very bad choice, right? I mean, I might say, well, I'm exercising my liberty, I can do what I want, but this is not a smart choice. We're not a smart choice when we are, as a group, representing a visible sin that will put people off, us and off. Even the possibility and being able to look down on Christians. It's something, the good news is it's something we can fix. And it's something that really should be fixed and be dealt with within the Christian community. And we'll talk about how that actually happens in a minute. This is a great story in our film. She was one of the, Natalie was one of my favorite interviews in the film. You'll get to see her. She lost, I think it was over 350 pounds, something like that. So when we met her, she ate herself into one of those rascal scooters you get at the store, those little scooters, and you've seen it now. I mean, back in the day, you never saw this. She ate herself into one of those and then ate herself out of it because she was so big it wouldn't move. So you see these people that get that large, and then, but there's this amazing story of redemption, which is connected to our faith and repentance. So this is not a lost cause. It's something that you sort of like, oh, and she's inspiring, was inspiring to me. But she's real sweet as well. She's real fun to talk to. When you see the photo of her, I don't have it here, but you'll see the photo of her when she was at her biggest. And you see how far she's gone, like a different person. And you just realize that this is God's work, and we need more of it. We need more of it in terms of this drive to realize. And she, when you talk to her, it's about her responsibility. I was this heavy, and it affected everyone in my family. And they were all doing things for me because they knew I couldn't do them. And this story of her going from that to where she is now is just amazing. This is Pastor Doug Anderson, who's a pastor in Texas. And he was in the news because he went before his congregation. And he said, he set up a sermon series, and the start of the sermon was, "I am your pastor. I'm Doug Anderson, and I'm obese." And then he said that you all knew it because you're all looking at me. This is him after losing the weight. But he said, you all knew it, but I'm just here to confess it. I'm here to say it. And he went on a deliberately to go with church members. And I visited their church. They have a gym in the church and all the rest of it. And it's a kind of a big church, kind of a bit of a mega church. But it was kind of fun to go meet them. We met congregants. So we're dealing with this issue really purposefully within the in their world. The great part of what he was saying was that you just cannot have our congregation dependent upon the government for their health. It really is something that needs to be dealt with in the family and within the church. So there's family responsibility as well. We have a demographic crisis, as you probably know. We don't have enough babies being born. We haven't had enough babies being born. And really what happened is this generation made a huge... This baby boomer generation have created a mess for themselves. They're heading to retirement, and they had voted themselves. They have consistently voted themselves entitlements that they were expecting, and the entitlements aren't going to be there because they missed the people that were going to provide the money for those entitlements. So we're heading towards this demographic crisis. Partly because socialism never works. It's a Ponzi scheme anyway, like Medicare is, you know, where you just, Social Security is, you get the money in, but you're paying it out as quickly as you get it. It's not kept for anyone. It's just given away. And we're at this demographic crisis where we don't have the people to pay for all of the entitlements. Plus, the burden on those people that are paying those entitlements right now, they are still having to provide a lot of money for this overpaid healthcare system themselves. So sort of this double burden. We really need to deal with this issue as part of families. Part of the family responsibility is taking care of the elderly, and they really are the most needy. In any insurance pool, or any kind of service, they're the most expensive. They require the most medical attention. When you look at the graphs, you know, your medical needs will just kind of go along, and then the last 10 years of your life, it's always like this. It's all the things that you will need. And so how should we prepare for that? Well, the best way, biblically, I would argue, would be to keep capital within the family. So getting rid of the IRS and all the Federal Reserve and all the rest of it would have preserved capital within families to accommodate these big spikes in healthcare needs at the end of your life. I'd probably be the cynic in saying that a lot of the big spikes are also there because of the way the system is set up to make the end-of-life care expensive as well, and treatments that don't work or help, really. It's our duty. We're responsible to take care of our elderly patients, or our parents, rather, and it's something we can really enjoy doing and can really be a blessing. We've all seen the blessing in the homeschool movement of having our kids home, of not sending them on the big yellow bus. Here's the other end of the spectrum where we can bring grandma home. And it might not mean that you bring them into your home, but whether whether you bring them into your home or not, or whether you find them a place that's comfortable for them to be, and you visit them and take care of them. The point is, it's our responsibility, and the blessing to you as the person doing it will be as big a blessing to the person on the receiving end as always the case with charity and taking care of people. We need to protect the elderly more than anyone else. They, along with the handicapped, are the most vulnerable. We all know through abortion that if the worst situation to be in is Down syndrome and in the womb, your chances of survival are slim. 10% maybe or something like that, I think. Spina bifida, if they detect it in the womb, your chances of survival are poor. The elderly are in the same kind of category, and we see this under the National Health Service. We talked about the negative aspects of that. But here's the positive side. Taking responsibility for someone else's health care needs, even financially, is a way to protect them from the state. The state has a disinterest in keeping non-taxpaying members alive. And so here's the solution. Bring them home and protect them. And this is a slide from the film where we went to talk to Carol Bridges in the background there about her mom and what she does to take care of her. And it's a real blessing to sort of get that story too. The next step we want to talk about is charity. This is another story from the film where the Good Samaritan story sort of plays out. Good Samaritan story is used by the left all the time to sort of justify. If you ever asked a socialist Christian why we should take care of other people's health through the government, this is the thing they go to. They go to the Good Samaritan story. But the Good Samaritan story isn't about socialism. It's about some individual taking responsibility for another person's health care needs and paying for it themselves. Not the Good Samaritan in terms of socialism would be the guy finds a guy at the side of the road and then actively pursues government help for that individual and organizes all it through the government and taxis another individual walking by to pay for the needs of this individual. That's not the case in the scriptures. So this is the story we want to see, the Good Samaritan. So, you know, a lot of libertarians and pure capitalists who are, I'm very close to and would agree with, get it wrong at this point. They sort of imply that the free market would exclusively deal with every problem. I would say, yeah, it's sort of true up to maybe 95%, but it's the other 5%, and that's what the poor that's always with us, they will fall into that category. Because the free market would reduce all the prices and make all your choices available, and it would reduce those people that are considered poor, and which has expanded and expanded through welfare over the years. That would slide down to the 5%, and these would be the guys that you would need to take care of. The hard cases that are often thrown up against people that talk about medical liberty. What about these hard cases? So we need to be strong and active advocates to be able to respond properly for charitable health care. I think that charitable health care will often fall on those that provide the services. So it's not all that everyone here will maybe be participants in the active. But you might be involved in a medical ministry. You know, might be a missionary adventure, or it might just be something you could donate to. I think, though, medical professionals, the gifts that God has given you, the opportunity for you to be like the Jules Madrigal Clinic in Marble Falls, you're the one that's best equipped to give that medical services and just not get paid now and again for things that you want to do for the genuine poor that you discern who come into your clinic. There's a doctor in the film, Alita Eck, and this is New Jersey. We went to New Jersey and interviewed Alita Eck and her husband. They're both doctors, and they have this little clinic which sits next to their church. It's quite a big church, but they have this, shack kind of, cabin thing here, and they have an open clinic. I think it's a couple of times a week. We were there in an evening when the clinic opened. I think it opened about 6 o'clock through to about 9 o'clock, and she has her own practice, but she runs this separately. It was a very good move because it sort of escapes the burden of liability and all the rest of it. So it removes some confusion, and it helps her to sort of just do free work here in her clinic for people that know about this clinic through the church. And the amazing thing about this, the experience being here, was sort of hearing about their motivation. They're all Christians. They really believe that medical ministry is a really crucial aspect. I think there's a bigger story there, which we didn't really cover in the film, in that medicine is something that is intrinsically connected to the purposeful giving of healthcare treatment should always go along with the gospel. One aspect of that is just when you're meeting people in crisis, it might be to do with what you need to counsel them in because of why they are ill. You know, the obesity story is maybe one part of that. Another story might be STDs. Another story might be a teenage pregnancy. But these are areas where the gospel needs to be administered. The problem with the socialist healthcare system is exactly the problem we had in the public schools, is the gospel isn't there, it's excluded. And if we have that same problem in our healthcare system, that the gospel is excluded, we're creating this situation where the problems aren't fixed. You have teenage pregnancy after teenage pregnancy because there's no gospel there. So this is back to the point we mentioned yesterday, is there's no neutrality. There's no such thing as neutrality in healthcare. We need a Christian healthcare system that adequately addresses people's health problems. And you cannot adequately deal with people's healthcare problems by throwing money at doctors or medicine or whatever. To fix the real healthcare problems is something spiritual, has to come through the counseling. So it's great to see these doctors do it. And the big difference, I'm sure if you went and looked at a Medicaid-oriented clinic, you're going to see a different sort of people coming in and out in terms of their attitude. When we were there, we were interviewing all of the clients, so the patients as they were coming out, and all of them were just so thankful. So very thankful for the treatment they got for free. So thankful for the doctors and nurses who prayed with them as they got treated. And a lot of these people, you know, this isn't a cross-segment of culture. This is the poor. This is the genuine poor. They've got no option other than going to the government, and they're showing up, and they're getting counsel. So they're getting, in a sense, this escape of their problem, getting this real necessary, graceful, and loving treatment from people administered through charity. So it's an amazing thing. It's a little bit about the church responsibility. Encourage medical professionals to use their gifts. Diaconal needs, you know, I always felt that we sort of underplay the diaconal work within churches. They tend to just be spreadsheet people and really not the participants I think they could be in understanding what their calling is, which would be to administer, in a sense, the tithe to the needy. And that's an area where you would have to be someone who really does understand culture, but also understand people. So instead of the deacon just being a guy who, you know, does the money or the books or whatever, I think there's a real place for us to take seriously that calling and deal with what the diaconate should be, which is the alternative to welfare in our culture. And so that people are forced to come to the church to be administered charity. And so there's an opportunity there. When I was involved in the diaconal work, when I was out in California, we really believed that and we addressed it. So if someone came, and you got all these phone calls, if you're in a sort of that position, you get these phone calls all the time of, oh, I want some money, I need some money. And we would surprise them by saying, well, we want to meet you first, and we'd go and meet them and then see what their needs really were, see if we could fix their finances, see if we could counsel them, try and get them to come to church and repent of obvious sins that we could see that were there when you often visited them, alcohol abuse and things that were obvious or apparent just from meeting with them, and trying to really fix their problems, right? And welfare is obviously has a blind spot to all of that, and money's given, it encourages sin and bad health. Churches, you know, very often in our culture, and it's sort of the way we've set up our churches where they kind of like, it's like theater, you know, you go on a Sunday morning, you listen and go home. We really need an active church leadership that does visit people in their homes, especially when they're sick, which I think they're required to do. And prayer also being the other aspect of that, and praying about health needs, that's key to it too. And then the tithe really being restored to the church, so that there is an opportunity to do all these things I'm talking about. We talk about voluntary collectivism, which is, I think, what we see, what I'm talking about, where people, instead of forced collectivism, where the government requires you to be part of their system that they're setting up, we have to be able to set up systems that deal with the problems in culture, but not under coercion, under just wisdom and management. And one of the examples I give is Samaritan Ministries. And Samaritan Ministries is a good example of an organization where there's a voluntary collectivism instead of statism. They have been able to solve one of the problems in our healthcare sphere by getting Christians off of third-party pay, getting them back to paying cash for medical services, and providing a way for those costs to be covered. The reason I think Samaritan Ministries works real well, which I'm a member of, by the way, they also sponsored the film, full disclosure, so they don't pay me to do any of these talks, but I'm here to sort of advocate them in a real way, because I think it's a good idea. It's not the only solution, but it's certainly an important solution. What they've been able to do is get a lot of us off third-party pay, which gives us a lot more control over our health care. It also forces us to price awareness. So we're actually paying less than most people pay because, you know, the insured person pays a copay. Isn't really that concerned about price often. When the Samaritan Ministries member, the difference between insurance and this Samaritan Ministries members, which isn't Samaritan Ministries, which isn't insurance, is that you are, when you go get medical services, you know it's going into a pool that's paid for by people like you. When you have an insurance company, the philosophy and sort of the logic behind it is you know that the big evil, you know, insurance company will eventually have to pony up the money, and so there's no sort of relationship there. But of course, in voluntary collectivism and examples like Samaritan Ministries, there is this real awareness that you don't want to burden that ministry. You don't want to just send big giant bills up there. Well, maybe not everyone gets that who's a member, but certainly I've noticed that that is the genuine philosophy of Samaritan Ministries members. And we cover that in the film a little bit, where someone, and also because you're just the simple act of paying cash for something, which you pay for it first and then it's paid off instead of just being invisible, gives you that opportunity to kind of question the actual cost for stuff. We cover that in the film. Expands choices. When you pay cash, there's many more choices. We talked a little bit yesterday about how the medical industry is a cartel, generally speaking. It's created this circumstance from the Flexner Report onwards where the medical services were chosen to be a particular type and pushed out a lot of people from the healthcare market, and has created this very expensive system that has been inaccessible to those that aren't insured and or covered by the government. Samaritan Ministries expands choices even in healthcare, the things that you, the way you can get healthcare treatment, and how you could just simply go about. So, you know, Keith Smith, his surgery in Oklahoma would be a perfect option for someone who needs an operation, who lives in California. But if they're on an HMO in California through their employer, there's no chance. You can't just go do that. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to get a flight to Oklahoma to get some surgery and we'll hope my HMO will pay it off, because it won't. So this is what Samaritan Ministries does. It's not just Oklahoma you go to. You go to India, something you want to get done. And people are flying to Mexico routinely for things that are and if you're paying cash, it just opens up choices. So medical tourism is becoming popular. I believe, you know, a good way to deal with the expensive cartel-like status of the hospital industry is to encourage more of that and make people aware of choices. A good example for me personally has been our births, where we go with a home birth over a hospital birth. We've had both. Now, I would prefer, practically speaking, something in between, where you had more of the machines and medical services, but without the annoying, grumpy nurses in the hospitals. Somewhere in between would be good. So I'm not anti-technology. I like the machines that go ping and all the rest of it. And I'd like them within arm's reach would be nice too. So I'm not some Luddite who just says, I'm going to do home birth because we homeschool and I work at home and let's just have a baby here. It's sort of like we want it to be, there's economics reasons why we're doing it, because the hospitals are so vastly expensive, and you go find out how much a hospital, we mentioned it yesterday, normal healthy birth, $17,000, C-section, $29,000. So that's what we're looking at. Our home birth, probably about $3,000 all in. We are shopping online on Amazon for all of the medical materials that we needed at birth, all the stuff. I don't know what half of the stuff was for. We didn't use half the stuff either, but we bought it all on Amazon, which is the great service ever. It's great, you know, just arrives on your doorstep 2 days later. We're paying less of what we would pay even in HEB or whatever because we're buying it through Amazon. If the hospital's buying that stuff for you, that's where the $25 aspirin with the $5 cup and the $20 walk to bring it to you, that's where the cost is coming in. We're mitigating all of that because of the way we pay for our health care through Samaritan Ministries. So we are aware of costs at every step. I'm not a great negotiator, but, you know, there's a point where you can make choices. You don't have a lot of midwifery choices, unfortunately, in Texas because of the cartel. That's what I think. Samaritan Ministries doesn't pay for bad things. You can't submit a claim for an abortion, sex change operation, hair plugs, anything like that you don't want to be paying for, psychotherapy or whatever it is. But a lot of insurances cover a lot of these things. And so that's the big merit of Samaritan Ministries. You know it's paying for stuff. This insurance, third-party pay, as it's designed in our country. You know, the thing about insurance is potentially it could work better. In insurance, I'm not lambasting. I have friends that sell insurance. It's not necessarily a bad thing. In healthcare, though, there was a lot of mandates under Obamacare, but those mandates on insurance was there already, and a lot of states had mandates of what insurance had to cover. So you couldn't go in and say, I want a male insurance policy that doesn't cover, lactation consultation, right? So that, or whatever it is, or births. I'm not married. Just give me the male one. I don't have any history of this, so don't give me that either. I don't want it to get covered for particular types of things. I definitely don't want the psychotherapy thing, you know, but it's all bundled in there. You know, an example, we talked to an insurance guy who's not in the film, but he gave us a really good discussion, which we talked about for a while. And it was, he worked in New York, and one of the things that insurance policies were mandated to cover was alcohol detox and alcohol counseling and all the rest of it. But they had a client who they were trying to sell insurance policy to that was a taxi cab firm. And they screened everyone for alcohol because none of them were allowed to drink to, you know, excess. So they always tested them every day for alcohol. I assume that's what they were doing. And so they were like, we don't need this. We're not going to have that problem with the people that we employ because we test them every day and they'd be fired if they were drinking and all the rest of it. But no, it was mandated. And so they were selling. And so when you get all these expensive insurances, they're expensive for a reason, is that it's not a free market. It's something that's being completely controlled by government. The other aspect of Samaritan Ministries that's great is it's about a Christian community. It's that collectivism that's the right form of collectivism, and it involves real prayer for people's needs. And you don't get that under insurance, for sure. It's the last scene of the film, last slide, and the diner is really everything about this film. If you've seen Indoctrination, you'll know about the bus. You'll know what happened to the bus. And so the diner is our explanation, because we think the economics of the diner, the simple providing of medical services, if they were understood in the same way we do everything else, not everything else, because everything is messed up, even the food industry too, but the simplicity of a free market within healthcare would solve all of these problems. I hope that's been helpful to give you an idea of how this will all be fixed. Thank you very much. Don't answer anything right now, but you can come to my booth and we can talk about
it. Well, just real quick, since I've seen you, those lost a significant weight, and I wondered if through this film process, does that make you more health conscious and something happening?
Yes. Yeah. Sort of, it's part of the film, briefly, and so the bus scene in the movie, the equivalent is something like that in this film. And so, you know, the idea for me is particularly to do with ownership of an issue. And if you think of documentary filmmakers, well, the other documentary filmmaker who made a film on healthcare is Michael Moore. And he's a big guy. And I think it's, I was, I mean, you, a personally convicted over the course of the film in a sense, but I did go into the film with intent on that personal issue, because I have to own these issues. Just like with homeschooling, we have to really just practice what we preach. And especially when we started talking to Dr. Scott Stahl, who was the guy with the statistics about obesity in the church, it is something that's so obvious, you know, and it's something I knew I had to deal with, but didn't really want to or didn't really need to. Although a good way to make sure that you do act on something is put yourself in a film that makes you have to do it. You know, that's a good incentive. But yeah, it's certainly personal witness, you know, where you're that guy. And also, I'm in my films now more, most of the last few. It's me, and it's sort of something that you become more conscious of, that you want to communicate the right Christian message. And the bigger picture, too, is personal responsibility for health. If you're not healthy, which is not about losing weight first, it's about being healthy. If you're not healthy, it affects your life, affects the way you think and act, affects your family. And, you know, one of the big ones that got me you know, we put a huge burden on our wives, you know, in the homeschool movement, where they have to, you know, they're having lots of babies consistently for a long time. And they're taking a huge sacrifice. And I feel like a lot of us guys are getting off the hook with an easy life, and as a sort of, we're the patriarchs, you know, and being irresponsible with patriarchy is a great thing. Being irresponsible with the status of being a patriarch is a terrible thing. And I felt that I was doing that with my health. You know, you see my wife take health, you know, going through health strains, and I'm not willing to go and, you know, jog a mile or two. And she's doing childbirth, which, by the way, we have a childbirth scene in the film where we sort of talk about this issue briefly, but it really hit me home in that perspective of dealing with my own personal. So basically what women are doing in the homeschool world is inviting a huge amount of discomfort and willingly accepting it. Guys need to do the same, is invite discomfort. And discomfort is not eating what you want to eat and exercising when you don't want to exercise, which for me is all the time. So, thank you. Yes, sir.
Do you know, is there a network where these different clinics and doctors who are practicing on a cash-only basis, or, you know?
It's sort of a new movement that's significant over the last 10 years. I don't think if there's anything that coordinated, it's not a bad idea. And we might think of doing that for our website, at least, is getting, well, you're the web guy, so that may be something to think about. Because Samaritan Ministries, as I said, people are free. Yeah, as I said, people are looking for opportunities to find their healthcare needs at a different level. If they have discernment, like Samaritan Ministries and some of the other cost-sharing ministries, they're growing really rapidly. One of the only good thing in Obamacare was an exemption that was given to Samaritan Ministries, which they won through the political process. So not all against politics. They won an exemption, which lends huge legitimacy to this little kind of idea that no one understood. And they got an exemption, which has given a lot of other people looking this option of cost-sharing over insurance. So there's now going to be, I would argue, a huge boom in that area, which is great for Samaritan Ministries, but it's great for Liberty, but it's also great for the clinics that start to look at this other option. So I think we're going to see a lot of it, and it'll be good to start thinking of documenting all of those clinics, because we've struggled in Waco, Texas. You know, midwives come and go. Our midwife's just retired. She's only one. You either go the hospital route or you're stuck in Waco. It's just a difficult circumstance. Okay, anyone else? Okay, thank you very much.
If you would like more information about Forge Ministries, including information about our upcoming events, please visit us on the web at forgeministries.org.